Welcome to the Dad's Podcast, discussions about dad stuff. I am Dan Pelham, founder of the Solo Dad Movement and host of the Dad's Podcast. Feel free to reach out to me and share your story at thesolodadmovement.com, email thesolodadmovement@outlook.com, Facebook, The Solo Dad Movement, Instagram, the_solo_dad_movement, Twitter, @thesolodadmove1. In this podcast, I will be interviewing dads and men from all walks of life in hopes that maybe someone will hear their story and understand that they are not alone. I want to shift fatherhood from boys don't cry, tough it out, and the disciplinarian to a place of love, empathy, and understanding from men who are willing to share their stories and feelings with others. I really hope you enjoy this journey into what it means to be a dad. All right. Welcome back to the podcast. If you want to introduce yourself real quick, and we'll just continue our conversation.
Yeah, this is George Davis having a discussion with Dan here.
So we were just talking about, you know, like how you deal with your traumas from your past and having coaches and all that kind of stuff and, you know, where we would go. And like you said, you've been working with the coach for a while. And what are you thinking from that? And, you know, how you think it affects your parenting and all that stuff, too?
Yeah, so it's so for me, it was a big change. You know, I lost my dad at an early age, actually not too long after I turned 14, about 2 weeks before I started high school, so major transition in my life. The only boy in the family and the youngest. And couple that with I was closest to him and he died in front of me. So a lot of trauma.
Right.
And, you know, you're talking, you know, born in the 70s, grew up, you know, 70s, 80s, you know, a lot of, you know, you didn't talk a lot about your feelings. You know, we were heavily involved in the Catholic Church, and I won't go into religion, but go ahead and just throw that one in there. And I went to a Catholic school, and we'll just go ahead and throw that one in there. So there was, you know, a lot of trauma, a lot of shaming, not a lot of support.
Right, and acceptance.
Right. And so, you know, I dealt with the death of my father for decades. And
or didn't deal with it. Would that be a better way to put it?
I should say the way I dealt with it was not the right way.
Right.
So everything was essentially stuffed. Didn't do anything about it. You know, didn't get along with people, you know. I was the party guy you could hang out with, you know, kind of went, you know, then I went into the military, and the military was a great way to take over and help me with my patterns and essentially give me structure that I didn't have. And so, you know, a very successful career. And the interesting part about it is it was ego driven, where, you know, I could do no wrong because I was in charge kind of thing. So,
right.
Fast forward to really this year, and you know, working with a coach has been phenomenal because you know, we went back and we've worked on all that stuff and had some major breakthroughs. And I will tell you this, that as you and I had just discussed before we turned this on, about the acceptance portion, was really, when I look back at it, my dad passing away in 1985 was probably the best thing that could have ever happened. And, you know, I really acknowledged it a few months ago and said, you know what, I didn't need that. I don't need my dad. You know, and I, you know, it wasn't a pat on the back that I did it on my own. It's basically circling back to say, there's a reason why it happened, and it was a good reason why it happened. And so when you look at, you know, my position as a father, you know, up until recently, I can tell you I wasn't there. And, you know, for numerous reasons, the biggest one because I was in the military and there aren't any set hours. So between either being, you know, out on maneuvers or deployed or away or working long hours, it's not uncommon to work 12 to 16 hours in a day in the military. And be on call all the time. So
right.
It could be, I could get called in on a Saturday. And it was the priority. So really, when I circle back, you know, the brunt of that was on my wife's shoulders. And, you know, she did everything she could to raise three boys, as, right. as a matter of fact. Not even girls, but three boys, right? And so, you know, what's happened since I went and started working with a coach is that, one, I'm a different person. I'm the person that I should be, and I recognize that. Two, the fact that, you know, I can't, you know, you can't dwell on your past at this point.
You can't change it.
Well, yeah. But the thing about it is a lot of people will hold that in as well as trauma and grief and feel like that there needs to be a lot of apologizing or making up for it. And really, in all honesty, at the end of the day, it's not about that. It's about the people that you love and the people that you care about seeing that there's a change, that you've changed for the better.
Right.
And that really, that's what matters.
Right. Yeah, now, starting today.
Now, is there, is there a discussion about that? Sure. Do I need a deep dive with my boys? I mean, for the most part, I haven't. You know, my oldest is 29 years old and, you know, he's a father himself. And I will tell you, it's still my child and he's, children forget.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that, you know, that you need to understand, especially when you make these changes, is that, you know, prior to making these changes, you did what you did because that's what you knew how to do. And that's who you were. Right. So a lot of what we hear, a lot of what you use is until now.
Right.
Until now, I was X way. Until now, I did it this way. Until now, I showed up this way.
I think it's easier for your oldest to forgive now that he has kids, too. I think it's easier when you have a kid to look back and be like, whoa. This dad thing's hard, you know,
and
he did do the best he could. And that's the thing. Like, I think, I don't know. I mean, you think you did the best you could at the time. I mean, it's easier to look back and say, yeah, no, it wasn't the best I could have done. But at the time, do you think you were doing the best you could as a father?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's all it is.
And, you know, the thing about it is, you know, there was a lot of, you know, trauma involved, you know, self-doubt, you know, not being acknowledged as a child allows you, when you have a family, that if you make it about you, that you're not being acknowledged as well. And so when children are being acknowledged by, say, my wife, you know, I could get jealous.
Right.
You know, I see that now. Back then, it was kind of like, you know, why was I so angry? Why did I want to not... You know, why did I want to make it about me and not get in the car to go to the zoo?
Right.
And again, kudos to my wife who would get out of the passenger seat, get in the driver's seat,
and go take to the zoo.
While I sat inside steaming even more.
Yeah. Maybe a drink or two, you know.
Yeah. And so now it's, you know, it's really about being the person I am now, right? Since these changes have taken over.
Right.
And understanding that, you know, I am a different person, that you know, I do lead with, you know, compassion now. That's who I am. I mean, still working on, you know, things that make me, you know, fire up every once in a while. But at the end of the day, it really is about being clear and compassionate. And there's nothing wrong with that as a male. Right. Doesn't mean that you know
you're not masculine.
Yeah, that you're not masculine.
You're
anymore.
Strong.
I'm totally masculine. I'm totally strong. I mean, still work out. I go to the gym. I mean, still do guy things.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's really like how you show up.
Right.
And when you show up and you consistently show up with compassion, and my compassion is true. It's not fake.
Right.
It's not like I'm like, oh, I got to just be this way now.
Right.
It's because I've dealt with my trauma.
Right.
I've identified with it. I've dealt with it. We've gotten it out. We've worked on it. And it wasn't easy. And at the end of the day, you know, the thing is like I said, when you go back to your kids and you're like, you know, you want to apologize to them, the best thing you can do is just continually show up as this new person. And then over time, they build the trust.
Right.
And that's where it's at right now. It's
really... You don't need the apology.
Right. Because previously I would have been like, well, I'm trying to do something really good and... And he started to trust me, and then I would just kind of go off the deep end. And now it's like, I don't even question it.
Right.
I'm just going with the process, and guess what? The process works.
Right. Yep. Absolutely.
And that's what's important right now. So I have three boys now that all three of them know, one, I don't drink anymore. And that was part of it. And you know, as Dan and I were talking earlier, you know, I worked with a coach. I'm not against AA. I just didn't use AA. And really, working with this coach, it's about finding, you know, my purpose. Because when you remove something that has, you know, consumed you, and there's nervous system involved. And when you take all that away, then it's kind of like, well, what do you fill it with now, right?
Right.
And so if you're not drinking, do you start eating more? Do you numb out on Netflix? Like, what do you do? So really now it's about finding, like, what are your purpose emotions? Like, what's your passion? Like, what do you want to do in life? And a lot of people, I think, are missing that. Because as Dan and I were talking, you know, it's like, when you go to work, is it something that you really want to do? Like, right. Does it excite you? Like,
does it make you happy?
Well, yeah. Do you, when you get up in the morning on Monday morning, are you stoked? Or
right.
are you just
right.
like,
oh, crap, it's Monday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another
exactly.
paycheck, paying exactly. the bills, another paycheck.
Would you say you're an addict?
No.
No?
No.
Would you say you're an alcoholic?
Nope.
No? Okay.
Don't even use those words either.
Yeah.
I was somebody that did not understand what was going on, and that was the only way I knew how to cope.
Yeah. Okay.
And yeah, so and my coach and I, we don't use those terms.
It's right.
Because it was part of a problem. It was not the problem.
Right.
The trauma, the fact that I had trauma, the unresolved trauma,
right,
was really the issue.
Right.
It was the unresolved.
The drinking was a result of the unresolved trauma
right.
of not being able to deal with it, so I'm going to drink.
And I could have not drank, and I could have ate.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I could have just ate fast food, sugary foods, just
right.
ate.
Or exercised, or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I could be a very.
Whatever fills that gap.
Yeah, I could right. be a very overweight, unhappy person.
Right.
Or I could be a very drunk person that's just as unhappy.
Right.
I mean, it's. Yeah, so really. It's, and like I told you earlier, it never was about the alcohol.
Right.
Never was.
Absolutely.
It never was. And so when you dig deep and you have somebody that can help you work on the trauma and essentially, you know, because like I said, a lot of that kind of going over, stepping over the line into this, in this new life, if you will, is figuring out how to make peace with all that back there and
right.
not dwell on it.
Right.
Right. You can't change the past.
Right. Absolutely.
You can't do it.
Absolutely.
And when you talk about the past with those that are close to you that you may have hurt, it's not really about going through everything that happened or that didn't happen. It's really about how you show up now.
Right.
And just be compassionate.
Right.
And as human beings, we're attracted to that. And over time, through trust of watching it over and over. In other words, you've re-patterned yourself, right?
You've reprogrammed yourself.
Yeah, you've reprogrammed
right.
yourself. So your
Absolutely.
Patterns are different now.
Absolutely.
What you say and how you show up is different now.
Right. And I think we were talking earlier, we were raised generationally to, one, not talk about your feelings. It wasn't something you were allowed to do as kids. Your parents, your dad never spoke about his feelings. I can tell you, my dad never walked in my room and apologized for being a dick once, ever.
Yep. Yep.
Just wasn't something you did. You know, yeah. I've apologized to my kid more times. Sometimes I'm like, dude, like, how many times is this kid going to accept I'm sorry?
Right.
You know what I mean? I keep screwing this up, but...
But, they're the... I mean...
Right. I show up every day, and I try and do better, and, you know, I go.
And, you know, as we, you know, when you talk about, you know, showing up in emotions, you know, I can remember, I'm 14 years old, it's August of 1985, and I'm standing at my father's wake, and a family friend comes over, a son of a family friend that I knew. He was probably 4 or 5 years older than me, and he looked at me and he said, "You are now the man of the family, and you just keep it all together." He's like, "This is not the time to cry. You cannot cry."
Right.
And well, first of all, I wanted to cry, and at the same time, in my head, I was like, "Huh? What is going on here? Like, I did not sign up for this, right?
I didn't pick this life three days ago,
like, I would have went in my room and cried. I mean, nobody would have known about it, but I was like, you know, now my dad passes away, and now all of a sudden I'm, like, not supposed to have any emotions.
Right. You're supposed to be the man of the house.
Right? And it's funny, because when you talk about, I'll just talk a little bit about death real quick, you know, and was something I recently spoke about with my coach, and I said, I was in a place where it was a brand new school, the feeder schools that went into it, right? And I only knew so many kids. And really, you know, when you look at the where I was, you know, only a couple weeks away from my dad passing away, you know, I'm sure there was some sympathy, right? Like, there was a little bit of sympathy from kids that I didn't know that were meeting me. But, you know, back then, it's kind of like, you know, everybody else is 14, so what do they care? Right? It's kind of like, all right, moving on. I'm 14. It's 1985. Let's get on with this, right?
Right.
And so the funny part is that when I spoke to my coach recently, I was like, again, I don't want to come off as being, you know, rude, or I was like, but now, you know, I'm in my late 40s and, you know, parents are getting older, friends from high school, parents are getting older, and, you know, they're starting to lose their parents, and how tragic this is. And sometimes I just want to, like, be like, really? Really?
Right.
So you got an extra 37 years with your dad?
Right.
Right? I didn't. So it's like, really? Like, let's go back to 1985, put yourself in my shoes, and feel that, walk in those shoes of trauma.
Right.
And how, you know, you didn't accept me.
Right.
And so that was just even more. It just everything was just laid on top of me. You know, things like talking about how, you know, people used to, like, tell me, like, you're an angry person. And I would be like, what? It would just make me more angry, of course.
Right, absolutely.
But, yeah, I mean, and to really go back and look at it and go, you know, it all revolves around trauma.
Right.
Like, and Dan and I were talking before he turned this thing on, and I said, you know, please bring me somebody who has not had some form of trauma in their life.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be drastic trauma, right?
Right. Absolutely.
My wife said something the other day about a teacher that, I don't know, second or third grade or whatever it was, and they were having a party at school, a birthday party for a kid, and I guess that's back when the reflicker candles, the ones that would relight, came out.
Right.
And the girl was a good friend of hers, went to blow out the cake, and she blew out the candles. Everybody kind of clapped, and they were going to do something, and my wife had said something like, no, wait, it's going to, and this teacher, like, called her a name, and was like, you know, whatever, and my wife looked at me and said, I idolized that woman until that moment.
Right.
Again, so you see when I don't even remember what it was, I think someone had sent her a picture, but all it took was a picture on Facebook to talk about something, to bring up a person's name, to start the story,
run
the line, and bam, there was a point of trauma in somebody's life. And it's that simple.
Right. Are you trying to now pass this to your boys? I mean, is it something you're consciously working on or not so far yet? I mean...
So I've been doing this for about 7 or 8 months. And really, here's the funny part. My boys are 180 degrees of me.
Right.
And have been. They, in no way, shape, or form, even though, you know, I created trauma in their lives... three of the most upstanding, nicest three guys you'll meet.
Right.
I mean, stop on the side of the road, help you carry a stroller up the stairs. Nice guys. Yep. Like, probably wonder how the heck they came for me sometimes. And I think really right now for me, since it's been kind of a shorter amount of time since all this clicked, for me it's really been about, you know, making sure that they see first who I am now, and then quite possibly move forward. Now, I will tell you that you asked that. My oldest son, just recently in the last, I don't know, week, I think, asked his wife for a divorce. And I knew it was going to get pretty bad on her side of it, right?
Right.
The acknowledgement, the stages of grief, the anger and all that, right? And so all I've done is I've really been in contact with him for the last week pretty heavily. As a person with experience to say, hey, you want to do this, make sure you do this, go to the lawyer, you know, check on this,
right,
you know, cover yourself on this. And at the same time, I've used the words, clear and compassion. Like, just, you know, like, everything from feeding into, you know, texts or name calling or any of that. And I've basically been with them to say, just let it go. Just let it go, because it's not going to serve anyone. Right. And, oh yeah, by the way, as a male, if you're trying to get custody of your child,
good luck.
Good luck. And, oh yeah, by the way, if you start down this road of feeding into what they're feeding you, then you're creating an example that the courts want to see in her favor. Right.
Absolutely.
And I said, so just be clear, just be compassionate. Because I said, you know, at the end of the day, I said, you're both going to be parents of this child, right? You're going to co-parent at this point. And the other person, the other parent, doesn't understand that, right? They're going through all these emotions.
Right.
At the end of the day, that child still needs two parents.
Yep.
And if you remain clear and compassionate, then what else does that child see? That child sees that they have a whole different person that's not feeding into everything else, the drama that's going on, right? So not only does she get to see somebody who is being her father, is also being a really great example of how to be a person.
Right, absolutely.
And that's what's very important.
And it's far less traumatic. I mean, it's
far
not.
Far less.
My parents got divorced and hated each other for 5 years and then decided, oh, why are we fighting? Let's be friends. Like, you know, I mean, because that's what, and I think to that point, a lot more men would have a lot more freedoms and choices with their kids if they could grasp those concepts.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because that's the thing. Like, we're men. We get pissed. Like, anger is, I would say, in the top three emotions that we come out with.
That's
90% of the time.
Yeah, well,
something goes wrong, you're angry.
Filled with testosterone. Tends to be the trigger.
Right. You know, yeah. I mean, you know, you get pissed off, you're going through a divorce, like, the easiest thing is to do is get angry.
Well, yeah, I get angry because, you know, depends on what state you're in, but, you know, there's states that unfortunately side with women.
Dude, Colorado's one of those states.
Texas is one of those, and that's where my son is.
Right.
And so, you know, I sent him an article on, like, day two that was an article talking about how fathers can get custody of their children. Right. And you know what a lot of it alluded to was anger, having, you know, porn on your hard drive, you know.
Well, and the ability to co-parent, the ability to be compassionate with your children and understand it's not about, okay, we didn't work out.
Right.
Your mom and I didn't work out. It has nothing to do with you as kids.
Right.
Nothing. Like, our relationship has nothing to do with how you should be raised and how you should be loved by both of us together.
And one of the things I brought up to my son, I said, here's how it should work. I said, so you guys, you know, aren't in love anymore. So you guys aren't together anymore, right? You become two independent adults now in this relationship.
Right.
You know, a mother and a father. Or maybe it's a father and a father, or it's a mother and a mother, right? Based on the couple. And at the end of the day, I said, you know, it should be when you pick your child up from visitation, or you're going for visitation, or whatever it may be.
Right.
You know, it shouldn't be like, you know, oh, your dad took you to McDonald's. Oh, I can't take you to McDonald's. That's awesome, right? It's not about that. It's about saying things like, hey, what'd you do at your dad's?
Right.
Really? Cool. How is your dad? Is he good? You know, just, it's about being a compassionate human being. That's
Absolutely.
All you're trying to show your
Absolutely.
Child. And the child at that point then starts to work through their own trauma of your parent, you know, the parents not being together anymore, and understanding that, wait a minute, they just don't love each other anymore. They love me.
Right.
Right? They collectively love me.
Right.
And they're two great examples of being really good, compassionate human beings.
Right. Absolutely.
And the unfortunate part of that is, you know, there's so many other things involved in a divorce on division of assets and, you know, what you did, what she did, what's he doing now. And really it's like, at the end of the day, it's like, well, you just kind of got to get past that and become two responsible human beings, partners.
And I mean, and no one's lucky to go through a divorce, but I think the luckiest kids are the kids that end up with two good families that love each other.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like, we're not together anymore, but you can accept that I have a husband, I can accept you have a wife, we can raise our kid together, we can go to a football game and all wear t-shirts that support our kids. You know, those are the lucky kids that went through divorce.
Right. And
not, oh, well, I'll be at your football game next Saturday because your dad's coming today.
Right. And you know, and society is definitely, you know, swinging very heavily to, you know, marriage isn't always the answer. You know, there's, you know, partnerships that happen where, you know, you move in together, you live together, whatever, in which, you know, those work out as well. And yeah, you know, getting married early on, I mean, you know, There's just so many factors involved that when there's children involved, I mean, my granddaughter, so my son's daughter she's six. She's past her formative years, and being past her formative years, it's kind of like, how will she be? Like, how will this all work out for her? And that's why I've significantly impressed upon my son. It's so important that, you be nothing but, compassionate about, your soon-to-be ex-wife, as a person. To be able to show, your daughter that, again, I'm a compassionate person. And, things happen in life and we can move on, right? And that's what we're really looking at, is the moving on piece.
Right.
So yeah.
Okay. So I want to get back to a few things. You said you're raised Catholic. Did you raise your kids with religion?
So we did. We started off, we did. And then I think it was about 05, 06, we walked away from the Catholic Church. Interesting you say that, because one of the first questions, or one of the questions that seemed to be the theme, was, well, how can you raise your children without that type of guidance? And I said, well, I mean, it's based on, morals and beliefs.
Right.
And I said, at the end of the day, it's illegal to steal. It's not right to kill somebody. It didn't have to be written somewhere. It's just not right. And if we know it's not right, we teach our children that. And I was like, I just don't have any reason to need to go to some structure for someone to tell me that.
Right.
And, my joke now is I get my religion, through a cup of coffee and sleeping in on a Sunday.
Absolutely.
And that's what serves me. Now, take that from the point that, not only was I raised Catholic, I didn't tell you my dad was a deacon in the Catholic Church. I went to Catholic school from kindergarten through 12th grade.
Right.
So, as you can imagine,
right,
a lot revolves around that. And my wife and I, we were married in the Catholic Church. So, it just doesn't serve us right now.
Right.
So that's why we don't do it.
Yeah. Your kids religious?
No, they don't. None of them, I don't even think my oldest, no, they don't practice. And it's interesting because I've had, both of my older children have went with friends before to their churches.
Right.
Even back in the bad times, when I was that angry guy, I just kind of went, it's kind of like, I'm not going to tell you not to, right?
Right.
Go. Absolutely. Right? Maybe that's something you find.
Maybe you find something
new. And, oh, yeah, by the way, it's your choice.
Right.
It's not my choice.
Right.
And that's one of the bigger reasons why we walked away, was because we felt like we were forcing something on our children that they didn't have a decision in.
Right. Absolutely. So, and, I mean, like, I haven't raised Julian with, which is my son, but I haven't raised him with any religion. We went to my father's funeral, which, being as his mom was sick, I avoided funerals, I avoided stuff like that, and it was the first funeral he'd been to. And the guy, the pastor, whatever he is, got up there and prayed, and at the end, he said amen, and Julian looked over at me, and he's like, did that guy just say almonds? I mean, it was a nice icebreaker for the mood, yeah. But it was like, I mean, he's never experienced that, and we talked about it. I'm like, dude, there's 4,000 religions on this planet.
Right.
For me to tell you one is correct and one is not correct is crazy.
Right.
Like, it's just ludicrous. Like, it's what you believe as a human being. Like, you need empathy, you need sympathy, you need compassion, and you need to know right from wrong. That's what you need from what I've gathered out of religion in my 43 years. Those are the things you need to take out of religion. Not the judgmental bullshit part of it, not the right and wrong, like, oh my God, if you don't do this, you're going to hell. If you do this, you're going to heaven. Like,
right.
If you're a good person, I don't know what happens when we die. Nobody knows what happens when we die, but hopefully, if you're good, whatever happens is good.
Right.
And if you're not good, like, whatever happens is bad. Like, hopefully karma is bigger than that, and we know that the service comes at the end.
Right.
I don't know.
Right, and my little joke around it, because having been in the military, there were times where we went out on patrols or whatever in Iraq, stuff like that, where the guys would want to pray, and, I gave them their space to pray. I mean, it's required, but, the thing about it is, people would ask me, and I would say, I sure wouldn't want to be the wrong religion and then, show up at the pearly gates and be told I was the wrong one. I said, I'd rather just take my chances right now and just not be part of one at all.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
And get wrapped up in all that. So,
yeah. Your kids, I mean, did they, from the religion, do you think they resent you? I mean, like, I don't know. I don't know that you resent your parents for putting you through Catholic school and Catholic church. Like, and I don't know that you resent because it's just what your life was. You didn't know different, per se.
You know, I think... I don't resent my parents for that part. I mean, I'm kind of resentful to my mom for after my dad passed away. I wanted to go to the local public high school, which was where all my friends were going.
Right,
and
absolutely.
It was closer.
Yeah.
It wasn't so far away that we had to drive there, that kind of thing. And, you know, I was basically told this is where, your father died. This is where your father, wanted you to go kind of thing. So
right.
I was kind of stuck.
Right.
Yeah, so when I look back on it, though, I mean, I look at it as, you know, for my father... he was in the Marine Corps in the Korean War, and so for my father, I kind of think it was kind of his way to I guess do a better thing in life or be a better person,
right?
Without really being able to understand what it was he was getting into. I just kind of think once they were in, and it's that kind of that narcissism, if you will, Everything's okay on the inside of the house, but it's really not. You answer the door, like, hey, how you doing?
Right.
But we're just having a family blow up. Come on in.
Right.
Everybody puts on that face that everything's okay.
Right.
And everything's not okay. And for the most part, for most families, everything's not okay.
Right?
I mean, because life happens.
Right. And that's kind of what this is about, is changing that generational bullshit of everything's okay. Like, it's not. Like, why do we have to, I think more as men... Why do we have to pretend? Why do we have to say, oh, everything's good? Like, why can't we go out in a group of five or six guys and have a conversation about real shit that matters?
Yeah.
Oh, no, we got to go out and have beers and watch a football game and talk about nothing.
Right.
Like, don't bring up your feelings because you're not coming next week. Like, no one wants to listen to you talk about how bad it sucks with your relationship with your kid is right now. Like,
right.
As men, we need to get past that. And I'm hoping to raise the next generation and the generation after that to see beyond this is what's expected. And I think your dad was... Like you were saying earlier, like, we were forced to go to college. College was pressed upon, like, you get out of high school, you go to college. That's how the world works. That's what happens. For our parents, I think that was even more ingrained, and maybe that was your dad's rebellion. We don't know.
Right.
Maybe he said, fuck you, I'm not going to college. I'm going to join church.
Right.
Well,
and actually, he had to go to college to become a deacon in the Catholic Church.
Right.
So he ended up going to college, and unbeknownst to me at the time, I didn't even know. I was like, I don't know. I think even when he started, I was like five.
Right.
So I think he was ordained when I was like 7 or 8. I was an altar boy the whole 9 yards. So, the funny part about it is, when we tend to go out as a group of guys, even if we do talk about our feelings, everything is always generally supported on the surface.
Right.
And it's never deep. It's,
right.
It's like, oh, dude, well, you need to get a lawyer. Oh, dude, don't listen to her. She doesn't know what she's talking about. Or, oh, man, that sucks because, you work 65 hours a week to put a roof over their head, and I can't believe she won't let you come have a beer.
Right.
Is it really about you going and having the beer? It's probably because you're not doing something else at home, right?
Absolutely.
You're not showing
Absolutely.
Up doing something else.
Absolutely.
And, or, your spouse may have trauma as well that's unresolved, and they also are having issues.
Right.
So, again, you've got two people... that have unresolved trauma issues that are trying to, raise a family that they think is not full of trauma.
When she was 10, her dad went out and drank.
That's what
her dad did.
Yeah.
Now you're like, I'm going to go have a beer. Well, it has nothing to do with you having a beer. It has to do with the fact that this is a pattern that she's not okay with. Then,
right.
Maybe she hasn't even discovered that.
Right.
Maybe she hasn't even looked deep enough to be like, oh, Jesus, dude, it's not about you having a beer. It's about the shit I went through with my dad.
Right.
And again, that's the thing, and I know I'm glad knowing you for as long as I have that you're working through this shit, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm working through this shit.
Yeah.
I hope that we can get the message out that the shit needs work through.
Yeah.
I mean, you were in the military. 22 veterans kill themselves every day. Because why? Because we don't talk about our fucking feelings. Because it doesn't get past the surface. Dude, I'm having a rough day. Man, that sucks.
Yeah.
What can I do to make it better? You want to go have a beer? It's never, hey, dude, I'll sit down and listen to you for the next 6 hours, talk about whatever's on your mind. That shit just doesn't happen. And I think it needs to change, and it has to happen, or we're heading in the wrong direction with the next generation. I mean.
Yeah, well, and the thing about it is, it's all about, and I think the bigger, one of the bigger issues is that, it's also a time issue. And we talk about trying to change this generation about, we grew up when, you know, the streetlights came on, you came home, you didn't sit in the house during the summer, you went out and you played with your friends.
Yep.
And it was a, you know, supposedly it was a safer time. I don't know that it really was a safer time, because everything is so instantaneous now. You find out whether or not, you know, if a kid was abducted 10 minutes ago, where back in the 70s, you didn't know that for, you know, 6 days, because it finally showed up in the papers, right? So you were still out there riding your bike. Yeah,
it showed up in the papers.
So, I mean, my thing now is really kind of like, you know, where are we with this, you know, I guess, not being a parent and allowing the you know, kind of the electronics of the world right now be the parent.
Right.
And I travel frequently for work, and I cannot tell you how many times I, you know, I'm very, very astute to what's going on around me, right?
Right.
Love to people watch, and how many people allow their children to check out with an electronic device?
Well, and not only that, how many parents check out?
Yeah.
I went to my kid's football game today. I can tell you, roughly 30% of those parents were watching their phone.
Yeah.
Was it a long game? Yeah. Did my kids get their asses kicked? Yes. Was it not exciting? Sure. Was it the very first game my 10-year-old kid got to play? Absolutely. Like, I wasn't going to miss a play.
Right.
And, you know, and I mean, and yeah, I sent text here and there, but I wasn't sitting down on Facebook for 20 minutes and not watching the game.
Like, I mean, I can't even say it's funny how we transition this, but and that's part of my issue right now is this checking out. Like, what's it really doing?
Right.
There's a lot of studies going on right now about actually what it's doing to the internal system of your body, what it's doing to your nervous system. You know, I mean, it's not healthy, and we haven't even gotten into the whole what's radiating from the electronic device and all that, right? And there's studies that are going on about that. But more importantly, like, you know, I can literally go out to a dinner, and I watch people take pictures of their food.
Yeah.
And I'm just mesmerized. I don't even know that I can really put it in perspective. And I'm like, what's this coming to?
Right. Or you go to a concert. Everyone's videotaping the concert and watching what's happening on their phone.
Right.
Like, you're not... I mean, I went to Lionel Richie, which I figured our generation and older, you know. Dude, still the same thing. Like, everyone's videotaping this so they can post it on Facebook later. And I have videos. I have 4 minutes, maybe, of videos. That's it. Like, I enjoyed the concert. Like, I paid $200 for this ticket. I don't want to share it with the rest of the world. Like, that's not the experience I want to get. Like, yeah, it's cool. Like, I was here, blah, 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 but I want to enjoy what I'm at Red Rocks. I'm seeing Lionel Richie. Like, this might never happen again in my life. And I think that the next generation misses that. This might never happen again.
And so part of it's interesting because when you look at, you know, where I was going with that was, you know, so what you're doing is you're not spending quality time with your children.
Right.
Now, am I guilty? Yeah, I'm guilty.
Right.
Am I guilty because, you know, I was in the military and I was gone a lot and I didn't spend time with my children? Yeah. And now, you know, it's that part of figuring out, like, how can you spend time together? You know, how can you get clear on your time? What are you doing throughout your day? Like, through my coach, I've actually have reminders on my phone or things that are scheduled that pop up. 6 o'clock in the morning when my alarm goes off, I get a reminder that says it's 6:30, it's workout time, Monday through Friday, right?
Yeah.
I've got a time, I think in the evening, it's from 5 to 5:45 that says, you know, it's like catch up and get ready for dinner. That means I'm coming home and we're going to talk about whatever, right? Because I just walked in the door, so we're going to kind of catch up, we're going to do whatever. So it's kind of not a really set on what's going on, but it's at least 45 minutes of getting kind of the clarity of what's going on, what happened during the day, what else we need to do, maybe it's tomorrow, and that's cleaned up. And the other thing, you know, once you take, you know, whatever it is that is consuming you out of your life that was negative, is then what do you fill it with? And so one of my things was to basically go fishing again, and I think I had like 3 weekends in a row where I was up in the mountains, like on Clear Creek and Boulder Creek, and I was trout fishing, which was awesome. I didn't catch any big ones. I caught a few small ones, but it was good. And you're out there, and first of all, you're out in the water. It's rushing. Right. I used to kind of make fun of baseball. It's funny. I used to kind of make fun of baseball like it's watching paint dry. And I can't tell you, I've been to more baseball games this year than I have in the past probably 4 years. And it's actually been one of my things that when I'm on the road traveling, that I try and see a baseball game. I saw the Rockies play the Red Sox at Fenway.
Nice.
Flew in for that game. And then I'm going to Cleveland this week, and I'm going to one of the minor league baseball games as well after we do a day of training and like a briefing. So.
And do you notice far less resistance from your wife about fishing than you do about drinking?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the thing about it is totally supportive. I mean, you know, I think I got tickets to a September game that I bought a while ago. Rockies aren't doing so well this year. Kind of bummed about it. Still going to go to the game. You know, Charlie Blackman's my guy. Arenado's kind of my guy as well. You know, great, great baseball players. And, you know, I asked her the other day, I was like, hey, it's on the September 11th in the evening. And I said, hey, yeah, do you want to go to that game? You know, they're not doing well. Should I ask your dad? You know, what do you want me to do? And she's like, she looked at me and she's like, I don't have, if you want me to go, I'd love to go. I'd love to, I'm just spending time with you and this is something you enjoy. And it really is. I mean, I've kind of got a renewed love of baseball right now. Yeah. I used to be America's pastime. I'm not so sure about that anymore. Right. Because every stadium's trying to fill it up. All the motionless seconds with all this other stuff. Right. We're shooting hot dogs and t-shirts and running around the field. And I get it. People need to be entertained. Why? Because
we live in an instantaneous society.
We do.
Absolutely.
That's where the devices come in again, right?
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So it's really all about kind of, figuring it all out.
Right.
Being compassionate.
Are you going to force your kids to school? I mean, I know they're grown, but is college something that you're going to require?
It was kind of a bitter pill to swallow. My kids have never been your typical, played every sport. And that was one of the things that was kind of hard when I was in the military was, you know, people would talk about their kids and football and he's going to go to school and he's going to play this. And these are the schools that he's applied to. And somebody asked me one time, they said, well, what do your kids do? And I said, well, my oldest son is a self-taught pianist. My middle son is, he's a skateboard fanatic, does very well. And he's a drummer. And then my youngest son, you know, does whatever. And they were like, oh, they kind of got it. It kind of clicked. They were like, oh, wait a minute. He didn't have to play football, track, baseball, or basketball. You know, and I was just like, yeah. And so something I came up with a long time ago, and I still to this day, I'll tell people is, I said, you know, at one point in time, I looked at my kids and I said, you know, the world needs garbage men.
Absolutely.
If that's what makes you happy,
yep.
If that's what pays your bills, .. and doesn't mean you're sleeping in my basement at 30 years old.
Right?
I was like, at the end of the day, just find out what you love. And I've got one that's 18 right now. Last year's school, he really wants his big boat guy because we lived in Santa Barbara for a while. So, you know, heavy on the Navy, aircraft carrier, heavy on the Coast Guard right now. And at the same time, he came at me the other day with, you know, possibly being a heavy equipment operator. I kind of looked at it. I didn't realize there's a heavy equipment like school in Colorado.
Right.
You go and you get certified, and you know, some of these jobs are starting out at, you know, 40, 45. I mean, you tell me where a 20-year-old kid can go and start making a living
without
$40,000
without
a degree.
Without an education.
Yeah, without an education, doing something that they want to do to then start their life. And, you know, like I said, 40 starting out. You know, they'll max pay range some of these things. I mean, there's guys out there that are
making six figures.
Yeah,
easy.
Six figures. Yeah. Or, you know, they've been at it for 15 years and they're making 85, 88K. Right. And I'm like, hey, that's nothing to shake a stick at.
Well, not only that, but they have a trade.
Right.
You know what? I'm tired of driving trucks. I'm tired of working heavy machinery. I'm going to go work on boats.
Yeah.
You do that for 3 years, shit doesn't work. You don't like working on boats. Whatever the case may be, you can go back and get a job driving heavy machinery. You have a trade that will last you the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
You can be 70 years old and go drive heavy machinery. Like,
yeah.
So that's
kind of where I've been with them. I'm a firm believer in that. I don't think college. I mean, I've got 2 3/4 degrees, and I'll be the first person to tell you that college isn't all that in a bag of chips.
Right. Yeah. No. For sure. For sure. From your Catholic background, would you accept your children for alternative lifestyles?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Absolutely. Yep. Have no issue with it. Now, 10, 20 years ago, I've been fuming.
Right.
But I've just made a significant change, and I think it's the right thing that that we accept people for who they are.
Makes you happy. Again, back to what makes you happy.
Yeah, I just don't think that people should be looked at or treated differently based on how they feel, how they think, or where they think they came from, or who they need to be.
Right.
If that's who they're going to be, then accept them for who they are.
Right.
And that's a lot of what's wrong with society is a lot of people are, you know, have this trauma, and a lot of their trauma is driven by what other people think of them.
Absolutely.
And that's unfortunate. Absolutely.
Yep. And I do think a lot of people, like, I mean, I can tell you there's people that have their kids play football because it matters what their friends think. Doesn't matter if their kid likes playing football. It's not what we're here for. I want to make, like you said, oh, hey, listen to all these guys talk. Oh, my kid plays football. My kid has to play. I got to fit in. My kid's got to play football. Or my kid's got to get into the right school because Sarah's kids down the street are going to an Ivy League school.
Right.
Like,
right.
Does your kid want to fucking go to college? Like, if you talk to your kid, like, does what your kid want matter? And I think that's a huge issue right now with, maybe our generation, but definitely the younger, the 30-ish era of generation, and maybe are still. But yeah. I think they're very much, I mean, you know, like, you pulled up, I'm driving a friggin' 97 minivan. Do I want to drive a 97 minivan? No. Do I want to spend $400 a month so that I can impress people that don't really give a shit when it comes down to it? No. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I could go buy a brand new Tahoe and fit in with all the soccer moms and all the other dads and have a $600,000 home. Not going to be happy.
Oh, yeah.
No, driving that Tahoe is not going to make me any happy. It's actually probably going to make me less happy because I have to pay that fucking $400 every month.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, what am I doing this for? It's a car. I need a car to get back and forth from A to B.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about it was, is, you know, I mean, I did, you know, I'm not saying I wasn't there as a dad.
Oh, I've been there.
And you know, I did the right things. You know, my oldest son, super smart kid, and at one point said, you know, I want to fly jets for the Navy. You know, we were at Fort Knox, Kentucky. He was in high school, probably freshman, sophomore. And I told him, I was like, well, here's what you need to do, buddy. Like, you've got to be smart in this, and your GPA's got to be at this level, and here's how you get it. Because I was in the military. I can help you out. I can give you the keys to the
right.
success, right? And when he didn't do that, it's like, well, you can't come back and say, man, I never knew how to become a fighter pilot in the Navy.
Right.
Like, no. You asked, I told you. You didn't abide by it, like, you didn't make the marks, right?
Right.
So they're not going to select you.
Right.
And yeah, that's part of it as well. It's like, if you ask me, how do I get a B? What do I have to do? I'll figure it out and help you, right?
Right.
I'll support you.
But you got to do the work.
But you got to do the work,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
At the end of the day, I'm like, well,
right.
You didn't do the work.
Right. You know, and I think the other thing that I would like for kids to realize, like, that you and I are figuring out at 47. If you want to do what makes you happy, number one, you can't ask for mom and dad's help. You know what I mean? You can't say, you know what, I'm going to go join the Navy, but can you pay my mortgage? Like, no. You know, you're a grown-ass kid. Like, my daughter, you know, she's like, well, I might join the military, but my dad's not really keen on that. And I'm like, you have two options. You can tell your dad to go fuck himself and stop taking his money and do what you want to do at 18. Or you can continue to have him pay your mortgage and have him pay your rent and have him pay your friggin' car payment and have him pay your insurance and have him pay your cell phone bill and... You kind of have to do what he says. Like, those are your options in life, you know? And I think that's a big thing that kids are missing these days. Like, they are living at home till 25 or 30, but who's paying for that?
Absolutely.
And who's accepting that as a parent, you know? It's like, oh, well, it's like, I hope my kid doesn't live at home till he's 21 or
right.
25. Yeah. But if he is, he will support himself.
Right.
I mean, he's not going to get a free ride till he's 21.
Right. Oh, trust me.
If you're working your ass off to get to a point and it's easier for you to live at home than it is to be in an apartment, by all means, dude, great. I don't want to pay for your damn apartment.
And my two oldest boys have been back home at least once.
Right.
Absolutely. You know, the first time it ever happened was back in my, I wasn't a nice dad and I wasn't too happy about it. But, but you know, he's blossomed. I mean, and the interesting part about it is that they're also three of the hardest working dudes you'll find too.
Right.
You know, 29-year-old decided not to go to school. I mean, had some issues. He's kind of drifted, and now he works for a company, has full benefits, is in management, and is getting ready to go to a 3-week course to become another. I mean, it's a family owned company, and he's doing well.
Nice.
And Yeah, I'm very proud of him. I mean, he's an upstanding dad. He's a good dude.
Right.
Who wants to do right by his kid.
Nice.
And that's awesome.
Nice.
Like I said, that's credit.
I think that's what you got to ask
for. That's credit
for.
To my wife.
Well, and I think as parents, that's what you got to ask for.
Yeah.
It's the hope that you raise your kids to be good human beings.
And that's where we're at with this. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
awesome. Well, thanks, man. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely.